Please note that this podcast contains information regarding sensitive events, including domestic violence, assault, and abuse, as well as other triggering events, such as murder. This podcast is intended for mature audiences. When Alice jumped down the rabbit hole, she immediately regretted her decision. A rabbit hole is a metaphor for something that transports someone into a troubling, surreal state or situation. Welcome to Afterglow, the unveiling of the Idaho cult. This podcast will take you down the deepest of rabbit holes as it unfolds. The story is so compelling, so bizarre, and so heinous, it's impossible to look the other way. Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow were dedicated in the most horrible way to an ideology that should only be fiction. Instead, their ideology put them behind bars. Join us as we explore the lives, lies, and diabolical crimes of Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. I'm your host, Kathy Brooks. Please follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hello and welcome back. I'm Kathy. I know I took a little bit of a break, but we are going to continue today with the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell case. This is Season 2, Episode 9, The Ugly Truths Revealed. If you are new to this podcast and want to deep dive into the heart-wrenching story regarding the murder of two children, JJ Vallow and Tylee Ryan, stop right now and go listen to the previous episodes where I placed everything in a deep dive down the rabbit hole timeline of everything that has happened. Before I begin this episode, I just wanted to tell you I did have some time breaks in between, and I don't mean to do that, but my family was struck with a heart-wrenching tragedy, unexpected and devastating to us. My 57-year-old brother passed away tragically and unexpectedly this month. Our family is very heartbroken over this. He leaves two young men sons, and we haven't even had the funeral yet. So that is coming up this month. So if I'm not consistent, please accept my apology and stick around, because I have not given up the podcast. It's just that real life sometimes tends to show up. Thank you so much for everyone that's donated and for everyone that has supported me with the likes and the stars and the reviews. Thank you. Very much appreciated. And also very much needed to keep this podcast going. Back to the episode. We start this episode the end of November 2019. Police are trying to figure out where the children are. Lori and Chad packed up and took off, ran to Hawaii after the welfare check. Alex and Zalema run off to Las Vegas to get married on November 29th, 2019. They get married at the Chapel of Love. The Chapel of Love in Las Vegas, Nevada. Alex, interestingly enough, takes Zalema Pastinus's last name. Here's an interview with the owner of the Chapel of Love explaining what went down that night when they got married.
2 weeks before his death, he and Zalema Pastinus came here, a Chapel of Love in Las Vegas. The owner, Sebastian Salas, remembers arranging the ceremony, but he says his minister remembers the mood of the wedding.
For my minister to be able to remember that, and it's been 2.5 months, and for him to be able to clearly tell me, what stuck out to me the most was the lack of emotional response.
Salas says the wedding lasted no more than 8 minutes. The only witness, the chapel's security guard, because the couple came alone.
They were very cold. It was business. They just wanted to get in, get out.
The marriage certificate also shows something untraditional. Alex took his new wife's last name.
Yeah, that's never happened. I've never heard that, and this is a first.
A private ceremony that took place 2 days after Rexburg police searched the home of Alex's sister. But Lori Vallow and her new husband, Chad Daybell, had already skipped town after authorities wanted to know the whereabouts of her kids, JJ and Tylee.
Live in the newsroom, Justin Lum, Fox 10 News.
So that was one of those great updates by Justin Lum, Fox 10 Phoenix. Also, on November 29th, that same day, Lori's friend Melanie Gibb, she gets an email from Lori with pictures of the wedding. And Melanie Gibb says she didn't even know they got married. On November 30th, 2019, the very next day, Melanie Boudreau, B becomes Melanie Pawlowski. Melanie Boudreau, Lori's niece, and Ian Pawlowski married at the same Chapel of Love in Las Vegas, Nevada. And Zalema and Alex are their witnesses. This is 2 weeks after her arrest in Utah. 3 days after the Rexburg Police Department searched her apartment, as well as Lori's and Alex's, when JJ's grandma had reported him missing. From what I've gathered, as Melanie and Ian began their pillow talk wedding nights, Melanie began revealing a lot of this nonsense, creepy zombie world ideals, Chad Daybell's prophecies. Melanie begins revealing all this to Ian. Ian, remember, there's an attempted shooting of Brandon. There's all this stuff going on. So people are starting to put pieces together. The police officers are looking into this. They want to know what happened. Tammy's dead. Charles is dead. Now these kids are being reported missing. People are running off to get married. Lori and Chad have run away to hide out, packed everything after the day of their welfare check. Zalema and Alex run to Las Vegas to get married because apparently in their belief system, they have to have a partner. And apparently it can't be the partner you already have. You have to get rid of that one, get a new one. So it's getting a little chaotic in the background and there's pieces starting to fall into place and the ugly truths are starting to be revealed. Ian Pawlowski sends a text to his ex-wife, Natalie, regarding Brandon's shooting because Natalie's beginning to ask questions. And Ian reveals to Natalie some of the stuff that he and Melanie are talking about. Don't respond. I need you to encourage Brandon to keep info he gets on the down low until I can get this sorted out. I want to help, but it'll be tough if every starts figuring out what I'm learning. She didn't know beforehand what was going to happen. He's talking about Melanie, his new wife. They made the attempt, failed, and told her about it after the fact. I understand that he doesn't want the kids around her because of all of this, but I believe if she can see them, it will put a huge dent in her trust with her uncles. She's scared and had been told her two middle children are dead. She has a family court date on December 11th. I'm trying to get her to go. In my opinion, what he's referring to with the middle children are dead is that they also have become zombies. So their spirit have left their body, but they're in limbo, but they got the zombie, right? They're not actually physically dead yet, their bodies. So that's what he's explaining to Natalie in probably the most simplest terms. On December 1st, 2019, Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell leave Los Angeles, California and fly to Kauai, Hawaii. They fly on American Airlines.
Thank you for waiting, ladies and gentlemen. We've invited first class. Now we're inviting executive platinum, emerald, sapphire, and ruby.
So on December 4th, Natalie Pawlowski, after she had gotten that message from Ian, her wheels are turning a little bit here. Ian's ex-wife shares some information with a associate of Brandon Boudreau. And because she's trying to find Brandon because she wants to talk to him. But this is what she had to say in this email. Hi, so I shared the information that you gave me and relayed it. And basically, on their wedding night, she laid out the whole cult thing, but didn't say it was a cult. And he was just so confused, meaning Ian so confused. Anyway, she told him that in March, a demon possessed my body, Natalie's body, and spirit came to her in a vision or dream and told her this. She was interrogated by the police for 5 hours yesterday and told my ex that two of the police officers were possessed with the spirit of two of the original 12 disciples of Cain. She told him that my kids' spirits were full of light, but that can change basically at any moment. She has isolated him pretty badly, like she has driven him to work every day this week for one reason or another. Won't let him talk to his family makes him listen to weird podcasts where he feels this pit in his stomach. But she tells him that there are light and dark weapons, and the bad feelings are the dark weapons. She said that in a past life, she was the niece of Jesus. Look, my ex is not the best person in the world, but I am legitimately scared for my own life and my kid's life and my ex's. I heard something about a missing person that she may be involved in. I don't know the details on that one. I have literally no idea what to do. I think he is planning on going to the police for some help, and I'm thinking she might blame me and come after me. I mean, if she's convinced that I'm a demon and God tells her to kill me, I could end up another missing person case. He is terrified that he asked me to take the kids away on his weekend, which is next weekend, because he doesn't want them around her. He has never done that, never. He said that she didn't want me learning her last name because I would contact her ex-husband and he would tell me that she tried to kill him and she's in a cult. I've never seen anyone so terrified. He told me to look up the names Alex Cox and Chad Daybell. I am so sorry for dragging you into this, but I have no idea what to do. Can you just get this email to the right people? Have them help us. Have us help them. I don't know. ... The next day, on 12/5, December 5th, they begin surveilling Alex and Zalema. The police department, they're on it. So on December 5th, there is some evidence of this in the FOIA documents, in the police documents, that document dump where there's tons of documents to go through. But this says December 5th, Brandon sent me an email. This is the notes in the FOIA docs from the law enforcement officers that are investigating this case. It says, Brandon sent me an email that was drafted by Natalie Pulowski, who expressed fear for herself and for her children. The email I just read you. Natalie was the recent wife to Ian, and they had children in common. Natalie tracked down Brandon after she discovered that Ian married Brandon's ex-wife, Melanie, on November 30th, 2019. After they married, Melanie told Ian about her spiritual visions, and there's some redactions here. Ian shared this information with Natalie, and they each became concerned for their own welfare. Ian and Natalie requested to speak with law enforcement after learning about the criminal investigation in Arizona related to Melanie's family. They go on to say, Natalie and Ian were both located in Rexburg, so I called Detective Hermosillo to advise him of my contact with Brandon. Rexburg police and the FBI met with and interviewed Natalie and Ian. It was learned that Natalie and Ian divorced in August of 2019. Ian met Melanie, niece, Boudreaux Pulowski, soon after then they married in November 2019, which we just went over. Since their marriage, Melanie told Ian that she believed in a new religion. Melanie went on to explain, this is all redacted here. Melanie did not provide the children's names, and Ian did not know which children she met. So they're talking about the part in there about the two middle children maybe being murdered. Ian identified Alex Cox as Melanie's uncle and said Alex married Zalema on November 29th, 2019. Zalema believed blank, blank, redaction, natural disasters. Zalema further believed an earthquake would occur in Salt Lake City in July of 2020, which would begin the war of good versus evil. Alex later told Chad about his failed attempt of shooting Brandon. Remember, there's a lot of redactions here, so you may have to listen to this back up and listen again. But then in here it says, Alex later told Chad about his failed attempt, and Chad told Alex that God moved the bullet to future attempts to redacted. It goes on to say, the hearsay information Ian shared with law enforcement provided insight to possible motives for the crimes committed. And then redaction, with Melanie, Lori, Alex, Chad, and whomever else could be related to the investigations. Ian agreed. And then it goes on to say, after I learned the above information, surveillance began at Zalema's Gilbert residence. Zalema lives in Gilbert, Arizona. So they started surveilling Alex and Zalema at that time. And so in the police notes, it does say on 12/6, I received and forwarded additional warrant responses from the cellular providers for the FBI to analyze. And it was learned that Alex Cox was back in Gilbert, Arizona and living at Zalema's address. So this is all before this goes public, but it's going to very shortly. On December 6th, 2019, Rexburg police actually interview Chad's son, Garth Daybell. Later, it was revealed that on December 6th and 7th, 2019, according to Zalema Pastinas, Alex Cox began having shortness of breath. On December 6, 2019, this is the following day after the surveillance began, Cox, Alex Cox, drove to Algodones, Mexico to buy prescriptions because they were cheaper. When he returned home that day, he felt winded. He had some shortness of breath, and this came from Zalema's interviews. It was later confirmed by law enforcement that he did, in fact, cross the border that day and return the same day. So December 6th, Ian meets with those detectives. There's an outline of information regarding what Melanie P. had told him about the zombies, the multiple murder probations, and this insane belief system. So I'm going to read you the Ian information that was later revealed. When Melanie began sharing all of these things with me, I tried to keep an open mind. I'd only met her 4 days previous, but felt very comfortable around her. I believe there is more to the gospel than what I've seen so far, but I never thought it would sound like this. The ideas seemed harmless at first, and she sounded pretty certain of some of them. She talked about how she'd learned some things in the temple and others from Chad and Lori. Upon first meeting Chad and Lori, I didn't get a bad impression of them, but they did seem different. I didn't think anything of that, as I feel like that's a fairly normal feeling to experience. I didn't give them much thought, as they said they were planning on taking off and that I'd be taking the reins concerning the care of Melanie. They said they'd be going to Hawaii and invited me to come visit at some time. Later, Melanie explained, portals, and that they could travel there by that method. They have portals, apparently, and they can travel through these portals to each other. So Melanie's explained that to Ian about the portals. The first time hearing all these new beliefs was a jolt. I was looking for someone spiritual, but this was a leap beyond that into concerning territory. I had fears and doubts, but I trusted Melanie and wanted to give it a fair chance. So I continued to listen and ask questions in hopes it would click for me. It never did. There were fun and exciting ideas, but I felt like many of them were ripped straight out of Dungeons and Dragons manual. Between the stats, accounts of dark and light weapons, and words spoken in blessings, it sounded like someone had created a tabletop RPG based on the Bible. It's a role-playing game. So Ian's saying, between the stats, accounts of dark and light weapons, and words spoken in blessings, it sounded like someone had created a tabletop RPG based on the Bible. While living something like that appealed to me, I couldn't find anything to confirm as I prayed and asked. I figured anyone called to something like this would struggle. But how else would they be made aware of things like this? I continued to try to keep an open mind and proceed with caution. Melanie began to share that she feared for the lives of two of her children based on a dream she had where they came to her. They brought her tidings of great joy. Her daughter thanked her for allowing her the freedom to use her agency until the end. This concerned me and made my heart ache for her. I felt there was no way anything could have happened without people finding out. We married faster than any sane couple would, but we both felt it was right. On our wedding night, she began to elaborate on the ideas she shared earlier about her children coming to her. She explained zombies and her fears about what Chad and Lori stated concerning the original spirits being caught in limbo until the body's death. She stated that Brandon had been possessed by a demon or other dark entity sometime after June of this year. She was told that either through revelation or by chatter, that something would happen to him, that something needed to happen to him in order for his spirit to progress and for the Lord's plan to continue. She didn't take well to the idea that her husband dying as part of the Lord's plan, but didn't think action would be taken by anyone. She still loves Brandon and would never wish any ill on him. It just sounded to her like it would be something that happened on its own when it was his time. This is where things started to become concerning to me. She shared the idea that Chad and Lori could have directed Al to take a shot at Brandon. It wasn't anything she was sure about. The concern began when she was called to the Gilbert Police Department and asked about Chad, Lori, and Alex after the attempt on Brandon's life. She later was given the impression that the bullet needed to move 5 inches so as not to hit Brandon. Initially, to me, it sounded like this was told to her by Chad. The discussion moved to Chad and Lori's missing children. At the time, only JJ was counted as missing, and the Rexburg Police Department had conducted raids on Melanie's apartment along with Al's. Melanie had been told by Chad and Lori that their children had been possessed and had become zombies. She shared concerns that she'd been told Brandon needed to die and that many indicate that Tylee and JJ needed to die as well. She told me she was worried that Al may have had to take care of the kids. She explained that Al had great faith and never wavered in his trust in the Lord. No task would be too difficult or great for him. When asked for clarification, she stated her concern verbatim. At that point, I became severely worried, but told myself there's no way I just married into a situation so sinister. I spent the next 2 days trying to justify my actions and reassure myself that everything was fine, but I couldn't get to that point. My ex-wife, Natalie, had been asking for Melanie's name so she can check her out on social media and get an idea of who she is. Melanie had been adamant that I not share her full name with anyone for fear that Brandon may locate and harass her. I just couldn't justify that and eventually gave Natalie Melanie's full name. On Tuesday, December 2nd, I got a call from my mother. She had just gotten off the phone with Natalie. When we divorced, Natalie made a point to cut herself off from my entire family and hadn't spoken to any of them for at least 8 months. She had made as little contact with me as possible, but hadn't been unkind since the initial conflict of the divorce. My mother told me she just received a video call from Natalie. Natalie was terrified. She'd managed to reach Brandon through his business and heard his side of things. She'd been told Melanie was in a cult and that she had tried to have him killed. While I didn't, and I still don't believe she had anything to do with his attempted murder, I was still terrified by the possibility. The next morning, on the way to work, Natalie called and we were discussing how to handle this in order to keep our kids safe. She told me she'd be going in to meet with the police. I told her I'd go along and lay out everything I understand. I saw two possibilities. The first was that Melanie isn't who I thought she was, and I keep myself and my family out of a dangerous situation. The second was that Melanie had been taken advantage of, and I'm going to get her out of a messy situation and healed. When meeting with the police, I intended to share things as I understood. Detectives Hope and Hermosillo were present, along with an FBI agent named Ricky. I've since shared all of my concerns with Melanie and have gotten clarification on some of them. What I shared with the police were the ideas that Chad, Lori, and Alex may have planned shooting at Brandon and that Tylee and JJ may be in serious danger. If Melanie's fears have any validity. If shooting at Brandon was indeed based on the idea that he was no longer actually Brandon and needed to die as a part of Lord's plan, then the kids' lives could be forfeit based on the idea that they're not really Tylee and JJ anymore. I shared that Melanie had concerns about them participating in the shooting and was against anyone trying to hurt them. She couldn't see them doing these things, but she also knew they would follow Lord's will as they saw it. She couldn't see them doing these things, but she also knew they would follow the Lord's will as they saw it. I shared ideas about earthquakes being prepared in Salt Lake City there would be a time when the quakes hit that many possessions would occur there due to the high number of injured there would be. Such a thing would be a huge threat to God's plan and would need to be dealt with directly. Al and Zalema had stayed in Las Vegas and were preparing earthquakes. At the time I spoke with the police, I shared concerns for the safety of my kids and Natalie. I offered to help in any way I can. I then allowed them to pull my data from my phone. I met with them again the following afternoon and restated what I knew for a few other detectives, Lieutenant Ball and another FBI agent named Travis. They shared some mild concern about me potentially spying for Chad and Lori. I explained that I was there because I was concerned primarily for the safety of my kids and I wanted to get Melanie out of this if possible. They gave me a recording device that looked like a thumb drive on a keychain. My plan was to record anything I thought could help locate Tylee and JJ, locate Chad and Lori, and understand what happened when Brandon was shot at. If I thought Chad and Lori were going to be calling, I'd turn on the recorder and just let it run until they hung up. I don't feel like anything substantial was recorded, as Chad and Lori never talked about the kids or their location. Most of the conversations consisted of everyone commiserating about the current circumstances, discussing religious ideas, and just catching up. In addition to the recordings, I would talk with Ricky, and he had let me know about things that may come up in conversation. He was never specific, but would give me enough information for me to know when it came up. These tips turned into Tammy's body being exhumed and Al's passing. So some of this is hindsight in this letter. And we're going to still move forward and go over Alex's passing and everything else in the future. But this is going to tie some of that together so we understand. On December 19th, Detective Hermosillo contacted me and told me they had another warrant for Al's apartment next door. He asked me if I'd give them the code to the garage so they wouldn't have to break the door in. I shared the code. I didn't see any reason not to. They went in with the forensics team and looked for any evidence of JJ having been there. Melanie saw them there and spent the afternoon at my apartment. That night, I went to the apartment and looked around to see what they had been doing or if they had taken anything. I also wanted to see the warrants to understand what they'd been looking for. After looking around, I went to see Melanie at my apartment. I finally broke down and told her that I had spoken with the police and told her that I don't believe any of this. I don't know how she would react, but I couldn't hang on to the stress anymore. Of course, she was hurt, feeling betrayed, and she reassured me that she loves me and that she understands why I did it. At that time, I didn't share that I'd been recording anything. I wasn't sure if we'd hear from Chad and Lori again. Over the following week, we had discussions on our situations, and I came to understand things a little better. She was legitimately afraid of the ideas I shared with the police and FBI, but they weren't anything she had proof of. As I spoke with her and dug into the details, I've come to believe that she truly doesn't know anything about who shot at Brandon or where the kids have gone. She only has what-if scenarios that she shared. I'm worried that I jumped the gun and have sent the authorities on yet another wild goose chase, along with prompting them to light up the national media with pieces of what I shared. My intent was to protect my family and help solve the case of the kids' disappearance, not smear anyone in the public eye. I certainly didn't want to give Brandon any ammo to hurt Melanie any more than he already has. You see that? He turned. And remember, a few minutes ago, he actually sent a text to Natalie and said they told her, Melanie, in hindsight, that they had tried to shoot Brandon. Lots of lies, right? And Ian flipping is very strange to me. I still have my doubts. Primarily, why not turn to the police first instead of disappearing if you claim your life is in danger? Why leave your innocent niece here to clean up the mess and encourage her not to cooperate with the authorities? Why encourage her not to fight for her kids? Her ex-husband now has temporary sole custody as a result. Why not simply provide proof that the kids are okay and put an end to this insanity? Isn't it odd that the two detectives assigned to your case happen to be two of the Kane's Dark 50? Everyone trying to do their job and save these kids are either evil or deceived. Your kids are missing, and it doesn't come up once during a handful of lengthy conversations. There are so many more that I have I don't ever want to have anything to do with those two after this. Melanie has been put through the ringer because of the paranoia and now is in the hot seat because I went to the police and tried to help. I know she's done nothing wrong and I want her free from this. I will no longer openly cooperate with the police or the FBI, but I will through a lawyer. My final straw was when I received a call on Friday from Ricky where he threatened charges of lying to a federal officer and or being an accessory in the disappearance of Tylee and JJ because Melanie couldn't clearly answer questions about the religious aspects of the investigation. After I shared my doubts with her, her world shattered. She couldn't answer those questions because she doesn't know what she believes about those things anymore. There's so much information dumped on her by Chad and Lori that she can't remember what she learned from them, from the podcast she listened to, or from her own 20-year veteran FBI agent throwing a hissy fit after one shaky interview, tells me all I need to know about how they want to handle this. She didn't trust the authorities before because of how poorly the AF treated her when she went to pick up her kids with the court order in hand. That arrest in Utah is what he's talking about. She said she had a court order. Remember that place, that police officer wasn't going to take any of that crap from Melanie at all. In conclusion of this podcast, there's some really interesting information when it comes to Anne as well. And then we will end after that and continue the next episode. But he says in his outline, attached to all this, one, multiple probations, from what I'm understanding, are like reincarnation, except for in other belief systems with reincarnation, you come back as a dog, a horse, a butterfly, whatever. Apparently, in this belief system, if you're a woman, you always come back as a woman. If you're a man, you always come back as a man, human. So multiple probations. A, minimum of 9 mortal lives to become exalted, but more to become gods. B, after 2 mortal lives, you can choose to sign a light contract or dark contract. Choosing light or dark is not permanent. C, you can choose not to be reborn if you're satisfied with your progress. D, the veil grows thinner each time you are reborn. E, multiple sealings are possible, but males can choose one true spouse or have many. So in the LDS belief system, from what I'm understanding, they can be sealed to each other for all eternity. Men can have more than one sealed spouse, but women can only have one sealed spouse. Two, translation. A, translated beings cannot die, cannot reproduce, do not need sleep or food, and do not feel the sorrow of the world. Injury is possible, but healing is accelerated, and it is never fatal. So Lori said she was being translated. Melanie Gibbett said they were being translated beings. Chad was saying, you know, you're translated beings. So apparently they get younger, they can get hurt, but they heal really fast. They don't need food. They don't need sleep. So that's that belief that they think they're that special for sure. B, done in multiple phases, tests usually lasting 3 days. Upon completing the last phase, the Lord appears to the translated. One, physical. One, can be any physical ailment from sexual desire to disease to severe fatigue. Two, emotional. Any emotional or mental ailment, which includes spiritual. Also, a great test of faith, a time of darkness and doubt. And he has under here, sexual. So this is all under the emotional category, right? And one, possible new phase discovered as husband and wife become more united sexually, possibly increasing power or vibration. Apparently, they say in this, there are 50 dark translated humans. Detective Hope and Hermosillo have been identified as such. Now, in this great big world, this is me, Kathy, talking with my thoughts in my head. In this great big world, those two detectives that are dealing with this case are two of those 50 dark spirits. Like, see how ridiculous this is? And they seem to know everybody that's translated or chosen. So these dark people, spirits, these 50, They work under the direction of Satan, Lucifer, and Cain. Okay, Google, who is Cain in the Bible?
On the website artsandculture.google.com, they say Cain is a biblical figure in the book of Genesis within Abrahamic religions. He is the elder brother of Abel and the firstborn son of Adam and Eve, the first couple within the Bible. People also ask me, what happened to Cain in the Bible? Want to hear the answer?
Yes.
According to Wikipedia.org, according to Genesis chapter 4 verses 1 to 16, Cain treacherously murdered his brother, Abel, lied about the murder to God, and as a result, was cursed and marked for life. With the earth left cursed to drink Abel's blood, Cain was no longer able to farm the land.
Then it goes into stats. A is vibration. This is an indication of one's spiritual strength. And two, above a certain level, 1,000, garments are no longer necessary. So in the LDS faith, they have to wear these special garments underneath their clothes. So if you get to a certain vibration, you don't have to wear those garments anymore. My opinion, that was Chad's little wrinkle in this so he could make sure Lori didn't have to wear the garments. That's just my thought on that one. And then three, higher vibrations can help thin the veil a little. Then libido, 1 to 100, and 2, indication of sex drive. I don't know. C, trust level, indication of how much someone can be trusted. And D, light dark percentage, indication of how much light and darkness dwell in one's body. And then he starts to describe the zombie issue here. Number 4 for zombies. A, human bodies that have had their original spirits forced from them and have been possessed by either a demon, original third of the heavenly host who followed Lucifer, a disembodied spirit, which is once living human spirits who have chosen not to be reborn into another probation, or a worm slash slug. A creature controlled by Lucifer that enters the body to control the host. B, spirits can be pushed from their bodies during traumatic events or deadly injury. And C, spirits pushed out are trapped in limbo as the body they're tied to is still living, but cannot be occupied by them anymore, which is what they said was about Charles, Tammy, the kids, more people, Natalie, Brandon. That's their belief, that these people that they know were zombies and they had these evil spirits in them and their normal spirit was gone. So they had to kill the body in order to release the good spirit that used to live in the body into heaven, I guess. Thank you so much. That concludes this episode, Season 2, Episode 9, The Ugly Truths Revealed. I'm your host, Kathy Brooks. Please follow, subscribe, rate, and leave me a review. I would really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Remember, I am a novice. This is not my career path. I have never been on radio or TV. But this story had become so interesting to me that I started following on YouTube, and it is so confusing when I tried to tell people the story, I decided to put it in the best chronological order and get the most information I can possibly find and try to still tell the story so it is understandable to all of us. I will be back. I will do episode 10. We have my brother's funeral this week. So it might be a couple weeks again, but please hang in there with me, and I really appreciate you all. If you'd like to help support the channel, there's links in the show notes below that can help you find a way to help support my channel. This is not a monetized channel, and I would really appreciate anyone that can help support it to help me keep going. Thank you so much. Stay safe. Stay well. I'm Kathy. Shout out. Thank you. My resources for this show, Annie Lennox, Annie Cushing, BLinux.com, Justin Lum, Nate Eaton, East Idaho News, Fox 10 Salt Lake, Beam Music. music from Dan.